The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Over 60 water supplies across the country are under pressure as the current dry spell of weather looks set to continue. We'll be talking to Irish Water shortly, but first, for the latest forecast for the next few days, we're joined by Paul Downes, a meteorologist with Met Éireann. Paul, good morning.
Good morning to you. Yeah, we're expecting some very warm conditions over the next few days as temperatures gradually increase. Now, we saw highs close to 25 degrees yesterday locally. Today, we're going to see possibly 26 degrees in either the south or southeast, those sort of regions. And then tomorrow, up a degree possibly. So it's just gradually increasing throughout the week. By Thursday, we're looking at kind of 25 degrees widespread over much of the country, bar maybe the northwest, and up to about 27 or possibly 28 degrees in the southeast. Similar on Friday, even if possibly a little bit warmer, and 29s are possible there in the southeast on Saturday and Sunday. Further north, up over Northern Ulster, we're looking at kind of 24, 25 degrees for the highs there. So pretty widespread warm conditions.
Looking out a bit farther than that, yep. Paul, is this heat wave going to be protracted? I know you've got a technical definition of a heat wave, and I'm not sure this one might qualify, but how long will this dry, sunny weather continue?
There's growing confidence, at least in the in parts of Leinster and Munster away from the coast, that we'll have heatwave conditions over the next few days up until about Sunday. The north and northwest generally will probably not see those heatwave conditions met, which is 5 days of in excess of 25 degrees in one location for maximum temperatures. So from Monday next week, it looks like temperatures will come back to more normal figures, high teens, low 20s. And some outbreaks of rain as well.
Some outbreaks of rain. That doesn't sound like a lot of rain.
The weather, the forecast for next week is quite changeable at the moment. It does look like we will get some thundery showers possibly on Sunday evening and into Monday. But widespread rain, not looking at that just yet. But it is quite changeable still in the forecast out towards the middle of next week.
Okay, but you're not seeing any likelihood of flooding anywhere, that's for sure, at the moment, Paul. Thank you very much. Yeah. Paul?
Thank you.
Paul Downes, a meteorologist with Met Éireann, telling us about the prospects for some people, sunny weather, and that's for sure. For other people, like those charged with supplying us with water, maybe the news is not so great. Tom Cuddy, head of operations with Irish Water, is with me in studio. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
So, you have a watching brief, I suppose, in weather like this, as to which water supplies might be threatened.
Absolutely, Pat. Yeah, we're conscious across UK and Europe there are significant water shortages. In Ireland, it's relatively stable at the moment, but we are aware that it's been overall a dry year to date, and particular parts of the country, the south and the Midlands, have been particularly dry. Our sources are dropping in many cases, and demand is increasing, particularly when we get a hot spell, there can be spikes. And some areas are more challenged than others because there may be narrow headroom in any event, but also, say, holiday resorts, agricultural areas, etc.
Now, you have a watch list and you have an intervention list. What's the watch list?
Well, we have a full list. In fact, all of our 750 water treatment plants, we monitor the sources that supply all of those, and we monitor them against their historical performance. And so at certain thresholds, we start to monitor them more closely. We put them on alert, if you like. So at this stage, we have about 60 schemes on a watch list and a further 13 where we're actively intervening to sustain the supply.
Okay, so 60 on the watch list where you are a bit concerned that they might reach a critical point where you'd have to then intervene.
Yes.
When you're intervening, as you have done in 13 sites, what does that intervention mean? Does it mean lowering the pressure deliberately so that water doesn't flow as freely for people and therefore, you know, they're just not likely to use as much? Is it as simple as that?
Yeah, certainly that's one of the measures we would take. And we are focusing very much on interventions which will have low impact or no impact on people. In some cases, we're tankering water to reservoirs at night time from supplies that have sufficient water. We are, as you mentioned, applying pressure reductions where appropriate, particularly at night time. We are bringing online some backup sources that may have been offline for a while. We're also cross-connecting adjacent schemes, so we may be able to supply or change the boundaries between different schemes. And we're sweating the assets that we have, so we're optimising our use of our treatment plants and our pumping stations.
Mm. So that is the benefit, I presume, of many of the water supplies being under the one umbrella of Irish Water, that you can do that cross-connections and get water from one place and even tanker it into a reservoir.
Absolutely. That's,
I didn't know that you did that. These are presumably massive, big trucks.
Oh, yes, yeah, very substantial, and it is a big logistical exercise, and it's something that we have to have quite a wide range and engage with the supply chain to make sure that they're ready for us and they're standing by. So it does help us, certainly, because we can tanker cross-boundary. By and large, that would be on smaller schemes, and of course, they're the schemes that are most at risk, because some of these small schemes, they're reliant on groundwater, which is very slow to recover. So even a heavy rainfall will take a long time to get back into the ground.
Now, talk to me about the capacity of those tankers. How many litres might one tanker move?
Well, a tanker could transport 20,000 litres, so that would be a 20-ton load. So for some of these small schemes, that's a very substantial supplement to what they normally use.
Now, you mentioned groundwater, and when the groundwater is depleted, how long it takes for that to recover? Because effectively, you get rainfall, maybe it lands on the hills, and then it filters down slowly but surely down to the groundwater. How much of a dependence have you got on groundwater versus lakes and rivers?
Well, we have a huge dependence in terms of numbers. Probably 80% or so of our 750 supplies are from groundwater sources, and they would be, for the most part, small sources. Our larger towns and cities are mostly supplied from rivers and lakes. The real issue with groundwater is it's a very seasonal cycle. So there's a long trend, and even right through the summer, right through until September, October, the levels of groundwater will continue to diminish, even if we get showers of rain. So groundwater is extremely vulnerable and slow to respond to improvements in the weather.
Yeah. Now, what about pollution of groundwater from agricultural effluent or other things? How much of a threat is that? Because you get the impression, just I suppose logically as a layman, I'm thinking if the groundwater is depleted, even a small amount of pollution is going to damage that supply, whereas if it's very plentiful, a small amount of pollution won't be as challenging.
Yes, well, protection of the groundwater sources is extremely important, and if a groundwater source becomes contaminated, it is really, really difficult and slow to remediate it. And for that reason, over a period of decades, in fact, there's been a huge emphasis on groundwater protection, and particularly protection of drinking water sources. So right back to the start of the EPA and through the department, the various departments that had oversight, there's been a big investment. And part of that has involved also rationalisation. So more and more small local wells have been taken out of service because the space that's needed to protect them against any potential contamination has been a challenge. And in any event,
so you're talking about things like their proximity to septic tanks or to places where agricultural effluent, whether it's the effluent from animals or whether it's chemical effluent from fertilizers that are applied.
Yes, and there are management plans around each of our sources to ensure that there are no problems, that anything like that is prevented, it's intercepted, and of course we monitor all the time for anything like that. So frankly, our groundwater quality has remained very high, and the measures that we have in place, we're very confident that they're secure.
Now, in terms of lakes and rivers then, do they ever become really dangerously low? I mean, we think of Dublin and the Blessington Lakes and so on, and the reservoirs at Poolafuca. Do they become dangerously depleted, or is that kind of a once in a decade situation?
Well, it was probably a once in a 50-year situation. It's probably has moved to once in a decade, and for some of our sources, it's more frequent now. So we do monitor those very, very closely, and it's very important that we manage the level of water throughout the year, because it's the water that it's the rain that falls in the winter that we need in the summer.
Yeah,
and of course we have to collaborate with the owners of those impoundments. Some of them would be the ESB or perhaps the OPW or other agencies, and of course we have impoundments of our own. Yes, we had experience in 2018, which isn't so long ago, where very significant depletion for Dublin and Cork. Mm. And that's we really have a close watch on those areas.
Now, there are some big commercial companies who use a lot of water. To what extent does the water that they emit downstream from their plants, is it okay for further use? I mean, it's presumably not allowed to pollute.
Well, there are conditions, there are license conditions on those water users, and most of them discharge into our wastewater networks and are subsequently treated in our wastewater systems. So there is very close control and monitoring and oversight and regulation of industrial and commercial
discharges. But, you know, for example, that big timber plant on the Shannon upstream would use a lot of water, I presume, and that goes back into the Shannon. It doesn't go into the drains. Mm-hmm. I presume that's fit for purpose after it is emitted from that plant.
Yes, well, there are standards applied both for the effluent, but also our own monitoring of the raw water upstream of our intakes also monitors for key parameters. And so we have early warning and intervention and prevention measures at all of our intakes. So that's not when something happens with the raw water, effectively we turn off. We have what we would say an inhibit, which essentially is a fail-safe stop the intake or prevent the outflow from the treatment plant.
I remember a chap suggesting to me years ago, he was a lateral thinker, and he said the best thing to do to keep rivers free of pollution is to force companies to take their input water from downstream.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if they're polluting, they'll be pumping polluted water back into their plants. Mm-hmm. So they won't do that. But I'm not sure whether that is the rule. Now, in terms of the hot weather we're having at the moment, obviously people are showering more, people are using water to stay cool, paddling pools for the kids and all of that. To what extent does that account for water shortages more than, for example, evaporation from the lakes? Because in hot weather, water is going to evaporate.
Yes, well, really with the temperate climate we have in Ireland, evaporation would be a very, very minor
issue.
But
at the moment now, for example, when you've got the temperatures up above 25 degrees.
Yeah, well, with the base inflow that we have, that isn't something that would make an appreciable difference, frankly, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, we have, as I mentioned at the very beginning, lots of water. Mm. If you stand, say, on the bridge over the Shannon in Athlone, Custom Bridge, I think it's called, you can see the amount of water that's flowing there. Some of that will eventually make its way via a pipeline towards the Dublin area and points in between.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Shannon virtually an inexhaustible supply of water?
Well, it's certainly a very substantial supply of water, and that is fed by the huge catchment area it has and the very high rainfall in that part of the country. So the rainfall is not evenly distributed, as you'll appreciate, Pat. And in Dublin, we have the lowest rainfall in the country. We can see how dry it is. The same clouds that drop the rain in the west refuse to budge when they arrive in the east. They just carry on.
Okay. Anyway, there's only a tiny fraction of the water will be heading towards Dublin of the total flow that comes through the Shannon.
Absolutely. I mean, we're looking at a very low percentage in the order of 2-4% would be the max that we would ever
need.
And
when will that project be complete? I mean, we've got planning, we've construction and so on. Is it like a decade long project?
It is a timescale of that order, Pat, because there's new legislation to come in on abstraction. There is the planning process. There are so many other factors and procurement and construction. So it is a long haul, and we have to manage what we have in the meantime. And our headroom is quite tight. We have a growing population. We have weather change. We expect to have significant weather events in the summer.
Although we're told our winters might be wetter and our summers might be drier, or perhaps it's the reverse. But as long as we get enough water, I suppose, over the 12 months and can store it effectively. Mm-hmm. What about leakages?
Well, we've a huge program of leakage reduction, and that's been working very, very positively. So we started a few years back. We were in the high 40s, about 48%. It's now down to about 37% or so. And we're progressing onwards. Our target, which we fully expect to achieve by 2030, is that we will be down to 25% outside of Dublin and 20% within Dublin.
How does that compare internationally?
That would get us right into the international top grade, and particularly for the density of network that we have in Ireland. So it's a very substantial increase. It's bringing us right up to the top level, as I say. And of course, it involves huge investment. We're now spending more than 100 million a year, and that will double in the next couple of years.
But there's an acceptance internationally by water supply companies that you can only get leakages down to a certain point. And after that, with burst pipes and other things, 20 to 25% is the best you can do.
Well, new leaks are happening every day, Pat. There's of the order of 100 new leaks every single day happening in the network. So you can never get it to zero, but you can minimise it. You can remove the hotspots. We can reduce the pressure, as you mentioned. We have very intelligent and smart systems, instrumentation that can spot what's happening. And our location and repair methods are much more efficient.
Now, some of the questions coming in from listeners. Has the recently upgraded Stillorgan Reservoir improved the situation for South Dublin in terms of security of supply?
Well, what it's done is it's removed what was an old 150-year-old open storage reservoir. So there was a water quality concern there with the water being exposed to the elements.
Yeah, seagulls pooping and all that sort of stuff.
Indeed, yeah. Now, that was a very substantial reservoir. So volume-wise, we're at about the same, but we have much more sophisticated and improved control system there. So that is a hub point for the whole city area, and it allows us to transfer water into different parts much more easily.
And what about the pipeline that feeds that reservoir, the Vartry Tunnel? Mm-hmm. Is that upgraded now? Because that was a very dodgy tunnel. It was an old Victorian, I think, mm-hmm. brick tunnel, and there were concerns if that collapsed and blocked everything mm-hmm. that there would be an acute shortage.
Yes, well, the tunnel was identified as a significant risk to Dublin's water supply. So about 5 years ago, we started work and completed a pumping main. So we bypassed the tunnel. We pump water through a main. We also, just last December, opened the new Vartry treatment plant to replace the old 160-year-old mm-hmm. plant. And the new plant is actually able to treat rather more water than the old yeah. plant.
And will the tunnel now become defunct, or will you use it for something else?
Well, we're looking at the tunnel with a view to considering the feasibility of refurbishing it, because yep. the tunnel is a gravity supply and we're pumping over the hill. So again, from the point of view of long-term sustainability and cost-effectiveness, the tunnel is certainly an option for us.
I mean, people would think you just get a rather large bore PVC roll and shove the pipe through, and that would be fine. Thank you very much.
That might work, Pat, but the tunnel it wasn't even lined. It was actually hacked by hand out of solid rock. So it's not a continuous standard cross-section that's there, okay. but certainly it'll be a good challenge.
Very interesting. Sometimes the water has a stronger smell of chlorine. Why might that be?
Well, we do chlorinate the water to disinfect it, and there is a residual chlorine put into the water in order to ensure that there's no further contamination from the mains and so on. But that is very closely monitored, the level that it has. Now, some people are more susceptible. And of course, if they get their own tanks, for example, in the attic, if there's an accumulation sedimentation over time, that can contribute to an odor. But frankly,
it vary? Because sometimes in my own water supply in South Dublin, I sometimes can taste the chlorine and other times wouldn't notice it at all.
Well, again, it can be very subjective, Pat. I mean, there are some people are very susceptible to when we change the water supply, the network valving from one supply to another, say leak slip to Ballymore Eustace water, both of which come from the Liffey. But one water is harder than the other, and people complain about the tea tastes differently. So it is a subjective issue.
Yeah. Someone who says, it's a genuine question, how come there could be a shortage when we have so much rain? Now, that's a global kind of a question. But you can understand, is it like the historic nature of our network, a lot of private supplies, group schemes and so on? Is that the reason?
Well, there's a combination of factors. Certainly there is growth, a lot of growth. Also the climate, the weather has been drier this year and over the past few years. But also the systems we have, the assets we have, they're constructed for a certain scale. So we don't have a lot of headroom built in. Essentially the standard has been over the years to build as you need. So
rather than future-proof it like the Victorians did.
Exactly. So there is a limited capacity. So if we get a spike in demand with hot weather, that essentially uses the maximum capacity of the system to deliver it.
A final one. Even before the summer, I've reported to Irish Water that my pressure drops between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. I only have an electric shower, no tank in the attic, so when the pressure drops, I can no longer shower. So that would mean I can no longer shower at all if the good summer continues. Drogheda area needs more government spending on water as the population in that area booms.
Mm. Well, we have spent a lot of money on the Stalene water treatment plant, which services Drogheda. And in fact, we certainly have sufficient water to supply. But the situation the person is describing there really is a matter of being careful about how people plumb their households, because really the only supply that should come directly off the mains and be reliant on the mains pressure is the cold tap in the kitchen. Yeah. Everything else should work through storage. We cannot guarantee, because we may have to turn off the water for a repair, or there may be a burst or something like that. So people shouldn't be plumbing appliances, showers or anything like that directly off the mains pressure. It's a risk, and it's not a practice.
And a final one. Please ask your guest why the pipeline from the Shannon is coming from the furthest point rather than the nearest point. I presume they're talking about, you know, why not Athlone rather than further south?
Mm. Well, many options have been looked at and have been tested against a range of criteria. One very significant factor, of course, is what is the impact, what is the marginal impact of taking an abstraction from a different point. The location near Bird Hill is at the foot of a very significant storage head race for the power plant there, and the impact would be vastly less than it would be elsewhere. But of course, as I say, there's a huge range of criteria that have been factored in, including the areas that have to be serviced along the way. So it's not just to bring the water to Dublin, it's all the areas in between Portlaoise, Mullingar, Tullamore, all these places. Yeah.
And is it your belief that in a decade, when this is done, that we'll never have to interview you again, if I'm still knocking around, about water supplies and water shortages, that the Shannon will do the trick?
Well, the Shannon will give us huge extra capacity, but also it will give us options. At the moment, we have 85% of our water supply in Dublin is reliant on the Liffey. So in the event of a significant event there, we're very much caught. So if we were able to counterbalance that, the balances we have at the moment from the Vartry and Dodder are very minor by comparison. If we had a counterbalance, and also we were able to share water across the Midlands as well as into the Greater Dublin area, it would give us a much more resilient and very substantial and fit for purpose national system.
Tom, thank you very much for joining us today. Tom Cuddy, who's head of operations with Irish.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.